This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. From the owl and the pussycat to Harry Potter's Hedwig, the owl is solidly perched in the hearts and imaginations of children and adults alike. Who wouldn't want one as a pet? They are adorable. They are also fierce, with the sharp talons and instincts of carnivorous birds of prey. When Martin Windrow first laid his eyes on a tawny owl about the size of a loaf of bread, it was love at first sight. He named her Mumble and began a 15-year relationship. After writing and editing numerous books on military history, Martin's latest book is about life with Mumble in a London apartment and later a village in the south of England. It is called The Owl Who Liked Sitting on Caesar, and we spoke to Martin when the book was first published. It is now out in paperback. Now, maybe we should start with a little primer on tawny owls. How big are they? What do they eat?
Well, loaf of bread is pushing it a bit, unless it's quite a small loaf of bread. I guess when they're sitting in their usual fat, comfortable-looking squat, they are about 9 inches high. If you could see them stretched out without that thick layer of feathers, they would be about, nearly twice as much as that. As to what they eat, well, in a state of nature, they would eat any kind of small rodent. Mice, rats, voles, right up to small rabbits sometimes. But they often, when they can't get hold of a warm meal like that, they'll eat worms, beetles, insects. They're pretty eclectic as far as their diet goes. They'll take whatever's around.
And they like the fur and the feathers on top of it.
Sure, they need that to make their insides work wrong.
Now, Mumble was your second round of owl companionship. What happened the first time around?
The first time was a dreadful mistake. I got a little owl. That's a breed, not a description. But the problem was it had already been born, if you will, and had lived for its first 6 months in a big aviary with other birds. So it was untamable. The trick, of course, with all wild animals is that if you want to tame them, you have to get them as young as possible. And the difference with Mumble was that, having learned my lesson, I ordered an egg before it was even laid. But the little owl, that was pretty much a nightmare. Mm-hmm. It was very frustrating, and eventually she escaped. And my feelings were pretty mixed about that, I got to admit.
Well, you named the owl Wellington, a rather imperious-looking thing.
And so it was indeed, yes. It had a fierce stare, which it turned on me with utter contempt whenever I tried to feed her by hand or anything like that.
You compared that relationship much more to prisoner and captor.
Yeah.
But then you went through the significant hurdles, by the way, of getting the owl egg that became Mumble. Tell us, please, about that moment that you say was love at first sight when you first saw Mumble.
My brother, who was a falconer and who lived in the country, he had organized it for me. I had ordered the egg, and for the first month or so out of the egg, Mumble had been hand-fed several times a day by the breeder's little boy. I was expecting, of course, to find, a cardboard box with a frightened scuttling noise inside it. But instead, I just walked into the farm kitchen, and there it was, sitting on the back of a chair in the sunshine. It was then, about 6 inches high. It was a ball of gray fluff with two huge black eyes, and I walked towards it, sort of half expecting it to be frightened and to back off or scuttle away, but it didn't. It just looked at me. And I bent over and said, "Hi," and it said, "Hi," back, and it jumped up on my shoulder. And something very strange happened inside me, and that was it.
I love your description, shaped rather like a plump toy penguin with a nose job.
Yeah.
Did you know, Martin, what you were getting into having a wild animal in the house?
No, of course not. I was full of dumb enthusiasm. And although, I'd, I had met pet owls before through my brother. I really didn't know what we were going to get into, and so every day was full of surprises, and mostly they were delightful. Apart, of course, from the fact that you can't house train an owl. So things got fairly messy.
And this was in a flat in London at
this
first.
This was in a high-rise apartment where it was a condition of the lease that we weren't allowed to keep pets. So this was a hideout, you know. And that was complicated, but it was so rewarding. I don't know if you've ever kept a kitten. Well, this was like having a kitten that was teaching itself to fly.
Well, I never had a kitten that I had to lay down newspapers throughout the entire house in order to protect.
Sure.
But why an owl? I mean, that's a question. Why an owl?
Well, I can't answer that, Virginia. I mean, my only reply to people who were astonished by this was, why not? Listen, I'll come out with my hands up. She was just so damn cute. And it just kept on getting cuter and getting more and more interesting.
Well,
I mean, I'm not an ornithologist. I never have been, even an amateur. But living with Mumble prompted me to get, you know, to hit the books and find out more about tawny owls.
Well, there is so much in your book about the evolution of the owl and of human beings concurrently. But ultimately, to me, it's a story of a couple. You know, you're settled into your various different routines of being a couple. I wonder if that ever got in the way of other companionship. I mean, do you ever bring dates over?
Oh, yeah. 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 Second only to the, what should we say, the hygienic problems, there was the fact that for the first, 2, 3, 4 months, she was as friendly towards visitors as she was towards me. You know, she'd let them pick her up on their hands and stroke her and make cooing noises, and she was just fine with that. Once she'd mastered flying and was having a great time flying around the apartment, after that, I began to have to warn friends. On more than one occasion, I had to actually issue steel helmets, which I happened to have lying around, being a military historian, because she would tend to land on top of people's heads and her claws. Oh, there was no malice there. It was just a landing spot. But her claws are quite sharp.
Well, she did love to perch on your shoulder, and apparently it's hardwired for tawny owls to want to sit next to things.
Well, yeah.
Are there other observations, though, of Mumble's instincts in captivity? For example, did she ever try to get away like Wellington did?
No, she never did. On one memorable night, I foolishly left a window open a crack too wide, and then I went out to the movies, and when I got back, she was gone. And the next few hours weren't much fun. But the story had a happy ending because she didn't try and fly away. She just sat on a ledge on the outside of the apartment block. And eventually, I was able, by waving her supper at the sky, to tempt her to come back down to me. And she hopped in her basket quite happily. We all think cats are full of affection, and we all suspect that they just come at chow time. Mumble obviously liked her grub, and that was our initial relationship. But she did seem to have a capacity for affection. She would come over to me and deliberately get up close and shove her head against my nose like a cat rubbing itself.
The she we're talking about is Mumble the Owl, the subject, along with Martin Windrow, my guest, of a new book called The Owl Who Liked Sitting on Caesar. It chronicles his 15-year relationship with the tawny owl. You kept a journal throughout your time with Mumble, but waited for years to put the experience down in writing. Why did you wait?
Well, the way she finally died, too early, she had years of happy life in her yet, was because some damn fool broke into the aviary in the middle of the night and tried to let her out or tried to steal her, I don't know which. And she had an instant heart attack, and that was it.
Mm.
So, in the immediate aftermath of that, I was very angry because this was senseless. And I was sad. And so I put the notebooks and the photographs on one side, and I got on with my life, you know. I had a mortgage to pay. I had other books to write. I had a career to follow. And it just so happened that a couple of years ago, I came to a gap in work, and I pulled out the notebooks and thought, well, let's have a look. And, of course, after all that time, I'd forgotten what I wrote, so it all came rushing back. And I thought, yeah, we'll give this a go.
The book begins with a note from the Hawk and Owl Trust strongly discouraging people from taking in wild owls as pets. Anything that you'd like to add, Martin, to that caution? Or, you know,
yeah,
a lot of people wish to have wild animals thinking that they can access some part of their wisdom or nature. What can you add?
My first and overwhelming thing is don't capture a wild animal, because what you're doing is taking it out of its natural environment, its established relationships, and imprisoning it. You have to be just about the first thing the animal sees, or certainly as soon as it's safe for it to leave its mother. That's what's necessary to form the bond. I had no idea what she saw me as. I mean, originally, obviously, I was mom, because I was doing the feeding. After that, I suppose I was her mate, because we were sharing a territory which she would defend. I really don't know what was going on in her head, but she seemed to like me and she seemed to like living with me, so I didn't bother to analyze it any further than that.
Martin Windrow, he's a longtime military editor for Osprey Publishing and author of several books on military history. But his latest book takes a turn and recounts his 15-year relationship with a tawny owl named Mumble. It is called The Owl Who Liked Sitting on Caesar, and it is now out in paperback. Thank you so much for listening today. There's so much more to hear and to explore at wordofmouthradio.org. And if you missed any of today's show, you can catch it in its entirety with the Word of Mouth podcast. There's a link to subscribe at wordofmouthradio.org or by searching Word of Mouth NHPR in iTunes. And if you like the podcast, do tell a friend. After all, the best suggestions travel by word of mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott, and we'll be back tomorrow at 2 with more Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio.